picked that up on the internet. I couldn't resist. I had to put that slide up there. Is it a sign of the end times? Well, you already know what my answer is going to be, but I'll tell you anyway. What I want to give you tonight is a brief message of, number one, perspective, and number two, comfort and hope. Let's talk about what's going on in the world. Let's talk about it from perspective of understanding this in its historical context, because I think sometimes we, I guess we're mathematically challenged, and of course I think like an old debate coach, and that frustrates people sometimes because they don't think that way. But let me give you an example. Years ago there was the old kind of a joke about the guy who was driving to the protest rally against nuclear energy and smoking a cigarette along the way as he drove there, of course. So of course he's going there to protest the risk of getting killed by nuclear energy while smoking and driving a car, both of which are much more likely to ever kill him than the nuclear power plant is. Now, nuclear power does have some risk, but these other things have way more risk. So if you're really worried about risk, you know, let's think about it rationally. Anyway, is it a sign of the end times? Well, let me test to go back in time a little bit. I don't know how well you can see that painting. It's a painting that was painted in 1562 called The Triumph of Death by Peter Bruegel. And it's really just this painting of mortality and people dying of plague and so on. Mass epidemics, pandemics of plagues are not uncommon in human history. In fact, they're very common. And I think what we're seeing is sometimes in the news is like this is something like this never happened before. This is this brand new thing. And what is this? And we've never, and it's panic mode. The first well-documented crisis, and this is talking about bubonic plague. This is not about all different diseases. This is about the bubonic plague. The 542 AD killed up to 10,000 people a day, per day, in Constantinople. Modern estimates indicate half of Europe's population, almost 100 million, were wiped out before the plague subsided. 100 million people, 10,000 per day. All right. Just a perspective on what's happened in human history in the past. It happens again, and this is the one that most people, when you think about the Black Death, bubonic plague in the 1300s, believed to have started in China. Does that sound familiar? Spreading along trade routes, reaching Europe in the late 1340s, killed an estimated 25 million people, almost a third of Europe's population in the 1340s. Had massive social impacts, not going to talk about that. But you see where I'm going with this. Let's get a sense of history. Let's get a sense of historical perspective about what an epidemic, what a pandemic, what real death is really about, because this is what it's really about. This is what human history is full of, is stories like this, and they're not stories. They're mass deaths of millions of people. But it happens again. The cause of the plague, again, bubonic plague, wasn't discovered until the most recent global outbreak, which started in China, again, in 1860, and didn't officially end until 1959, and that one only caused 10 million deaths, so that was much, much better, I guess. You see my point, though. I was doing some research. I think I have it on the next slide. No, I do. I'm not going to show it to you. I was doing some research, and this kind of surprised me. Do you know what the number one cause of death in all of human history has been? All of human history. The number one ultimate cause of sin, I know that. But the proximate cause, the thing that actually causes people to go into their grave. Do you know what the number one thing that has killed more people in human history? The answer is smallpox. And that's on the next slide. Smallpox, just in the 20th century alone, killed between 300 to 500 million people in the 20th century alone. That's not counting all the Indians that got killed in the 1400s, 1500s when the people came over, or all the people before that, or all the people in the 1600s, 1700s, just in the 20th century alone. In 1967, that's within the lifetimes of all of us, I think, except Vince. I think it is, right? And Garrett, sorry. That's within our lifetimes, okay? 2 million people in 1967 alone died of smallpox. Did you know that? All right. So 1918, the Spanish flu after World War I, all the soldiers came home and brought it back to their countries. 50 to 100 million people died from the Spanish flu in 1918. Malaria, today, that's right now. Over 500,000 people die of malaria every year in the world. Every year. 500,000 per year. Now, why does all that happen? Well, the answer to that, I think, is in Genesis chapter 3 and verse 17 in the curse in the garden, where to Adam, God says, because you have listened to the voice of your wife and have eaten of the tree of which I commanded you, you shall not eat of it. Cursed is the ground because of you. In pain you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Thorns and thistles it shall bring forth for you, and you shall eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your face you shall eat bread till you return to the ground, for out of it you were taken, for you are dust, and to dust you shall return. That's why all that stuff happens. Okay? Because if that hadn't happened, if Genesis 3 hadn't happened, all this stuff wouldn't have happened. Okay? These are consequences of the sinful world that we live in. Disease and death and epidemics and pandemics are not signs of the apocalypse or the end times. All right, if they were, the end times would have already happened 10 or 20 times already. It would have happened back in the 500s and the 700s and the 1300s. And every year that 500,000 people die of malaria, is that a sign of the end times? No. It's a sign that we live in a Genesis 3 world. It's a sign that we live in a world that's been cursed with death. Thanks to the evil influence of Satan and the just punishment of God. And here's the thing. We have not been promised a comfortable existence free of risk. God never promised that to you. Didn't promise it. And so we have no right to expect that from God. What we have to expect is that there are risks. Every time you get in a car, every time you step out of your house, every time you go to sleep and might not wake up the next morning. That's life. That's what it is. Ever since Genesis 3, that's what we face. Virus itself, and this is as of one day ago, worldwide, has killed 13,000 people. Right? And I gave you all those numbers before, not to trivialize or minimize, but to put it in perspective. I'm not saying it's a hoax or a joke or anything like that. It's not. It's a serious matter. And I don't want anybody to get it. And I don't want you to get it. I don't want to get it. I don't want anybody I know to get it. But I just want you to put it in perspective of how this plays out given the world at large, given what we know historically. This quote I picked up just recently, it says, a team of infectious disease experts calculates that the fatality rate in people who have symptoms of the disease caused by the new coronavirus is about 1.4%. Although that estimate applies specifically to Wuhan, the Chinese city where the outbreak began, and is based on data from there, it offers a guide to the rest of the world where many countries might see even lower death rates. Now, if 1.4% of the people who get this die, that's still tragic for them and their families, and I don't want that to happen, but it's not the Black Death. It's not 500,000 people a year from malaria. It's not bubonic plague. It's not smallpox. It's a disease that will kill some people, but it's not the end of the world. All right? What we need to have is we need to be concerned, but don't panic. Have concern, but don't panic. Up there in the chart are statistics, and I rounded them off to the zeros just to make it easier. But in 2017, those are the statistics from the federal government on the causes of death in the United States. The number one cause of death in the United States, not in the world at large, but in the U.S., is heart disease, followed by cancer, lower respiratory disease, stroke, Alzheimer's, diabetes, flu, and pneumonia. This one surprised me. Suicide, 47,000 suicides every year in the United States. Wow. And then car accidents, 37,000 motor vehicle accidents, 37,000 deaths. And none of these, that's not counting injuries or anything else, that's just deaths. So when I look at that, again, I'm not trivializing or minimizing coronavirus. But what I'm telling you is, when you look at these numbers, you say, wow, you're a lot more likely to die from one of these than you are from coronavirus. You really are. So be concerned about it, but don't panic. All right? If you're not afraid to get in a car, then don't be afraid to live your life. All right? The old saying about air travel is that the most dangerous part of any airline travel is the drive to the airport. If you survive that, you're going to be fine. On the other hand, when I say don't panic, again, by don't trivialize it, but I also don't want you to tempt fate. I'm not up here encouraging you to ignore it. I'm not up here saying don't worry about it at all. When we look at those other causes of death, heart disease, cancer, diabetes, and all those others, we take precautions. We take reasonable precautions, don't we? If we have a smoking habit, we know that's going to cause cancer, heart disease. We quit smoking to stop that. Or if we have blood pressure, a doctor says, well, you need a low salt diet. Okay, we follow that diet to reduce the risk, to reduce the danger. Okay? If we have diabetes, we take medication or insulin, again, to prevent that early death from happening. If we're driving in our car, we don't want to be one of those 37,000 that die every year. We wear seatbelts. Okay? Those are all reasonable things that we can do to minimize the risk. Does it guarantee that you won't die in a wreck? No. Does it guarantee you won't have a stroke or cancer? No. But we take reasonable precautions with this and with any disease. Why? It isn't because of a lack of trust in God. It's because of this principle Jesus talked about in Matthew 4 and verse 6, where Jesus is being tempted by Satan. He says, if you are the Son of God, throw yourself down, for it is written, he will command his angels concerning you, and on their hands they will bear you up, lest you strike your foot against a stone. He's telling Jesus to jump off the roof of the temple, and the angels will catch him on the way down. They have to, because the prophet said, the psalmist said, that the Messiah would be protected by the angels. And Jesus said to him, again, it is written, you shall not put the Lord your God to the test. You're not going to jump off the roof of the temple to see if the angels really catch him on the way down. All right? Don't drive around without seatbelts just to see if God's going to save you from getting thrown through the windshield. Okay? Please don't do that. All right? Trust God and wear a seatbelt. All right? Trust God and wash your hands. All right? Trust God and disinfect things. Whatever you got to do. Okay? But trust God. All right? Don't put him to the test. Trust him. And just as we would with anything else, take the normal precautions that we always take. All right? Some final principles I want to leave you with. First of all, our God is bigger than any virus, war, or plague. We serve a God who's way bigger than that. Psalm 93 says, the Lord reigns, he is clothed with majesty, the Lord is clothed, he has girded himself with strength. Surely the world is established so that it cannot be moved. Your throne is established from old, you are from everlasting. The floods have lifted up, O Lord. The floods have lifted up their voice, the floods lift up their waves. The Lord on high is mightier than the noise of many waters, than the mighty waves of the sea. Yeah, he's bigger than any virus or anything else, isn't he? There's a principle contained, and I should probably do a whole lesson on this. In the book of Daniel, you will recall that King Nebuchadnezzar commands all the people that they should come out and worship the golden image that he sets up. Whenever the band starts to play, everybody has to come out and worship the image. And of course, these three Jewish men who have been brought back from brought into captivity, the band plays, people go out and worship, but they don't. And they get called in before the king. And the king says, well, what's going on? Why didn't you worship the image you were supposed to? And he gives them another chance. He says, all right, I'll give you another chance. Now, the next time, go out and worship. But then he says, Nebuchadnezzar says, but if you do not worship, you shall be cast immediately into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you from my hands? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If that is the case, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us from your hand, O king. But if not, let it be known to you, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image which you have set up. These guys know that God is able to save them from the fiery furnace. I don't think they know whether he's really going to or not. They know he's able to, but they throw that in verse 18. He's able to serve us, but if not, we're still not going to worship the image, even if we do get burned up in the furnace. So what? And I think that's where we're at. God is able to save everybody in this room from the virus. He's able to. He's quite able to. But if not, are you going to stop serving him? I'm not. I'm going to serve him whether I get sick or not. We're going to keep worshiping him whether we get sick or not. We're going to trust him. There are things we can't control, and we need to let God handle those things. Luke 12:25, and which of you, by worrying, can add one cubit to his stature? If you then are not able to do the least, why are you anxious for the rest? Worrying can't accomplish even the smallest things, but God can. And that's why we need to call upon him. That's why I want us to do extra time for prayer this evening, because there are just things we can't control, and we need to let God handle them and ask him to handle them and not spend our time in excessive worry about them. Another thing I want to point out is we're here to help. And by we, I mean specifically Mike and me, but also the church as a whole is here to help. In Acts 20, Paul advised the Ephesian elders. He said, I've shown you in every way by laboring like this that you must support the weak. And remember the words of the Lord Jesus that he said is more blessed to give than to receive. Galatians 6 and verse 2 says, bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. The church is here to help. If you need help in some way, if there's anything that we can do for you during this time of crisis, speak out. Let us know. And Mike and I will come. We will help you. Somebody will help you if you let us know. Let us know that you have those burdens and we'll help you bear them. And then finally, prayer is the answer. Philippians 4 and verse 6 says, be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. That's the answer. And so we're going to avail ourselves of that answer tonight. Thank you for your kind attention. Let's spend a moment in prayer now, and then we'll go on with the list.